Welcome to All the Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeartRadio in partnership with Showtime.
Welcome back, season three, All the Smoke.
We're back.
Man.
Another one.
Third season.
Man.
We in this bitch.
Keep getting this
money. You have a good break?
I had a wonderful break.
So you
winning
championships and walking streets and doing all that kind of cool shit.
Champion as a coach now, but
Big
you know,
three champ.
Had a little time off to just chill. We ain't had as much time off in a minute. So
you haven't.
But ready to get back to it.
I see you put some pounds on in the off season.
Yeah, man. Who you telling? I'm gained by 30 pounds.
I got a plan for you to get back slim.
Yeah, I know. I'm back on it.
Come work out with me and this dude's trainer.
No.
Absolutely not?
Absolutely not. That dude's an animal. I ain't got time for that.
Hey, man, it's an honor, a pleasure to kick off season three with the one and only, man, Kevin Hart.
How are you, sir?
Man, Kev, good
are
to see you, man. Appreciate you.
Appreciate you coming, man.
Oh, man, I appreciate you having me.
That mic is kind of big. You all right? That mic is like the size of your head.
There's a lot of stuff in here that I want to talk to you guys about when
Go
I
ahead.
Leave. Just, it's not size friendly. It's not size friendly in here. Microphone's the size of my goddamn scalp. I don't like that. The couch actually is not bad. I didn't know how big the couch situation was going to be, but I feel comfortable. My feet are, I have a strong base, you know. You can still hear the tone in my voice. I'm ready to talk. But before I get into that, flowers, man. Season three, that's a big deal, guys.
Thanks, bro.
Season three, man. You guys doing an amazing job. That's why I'm here.
Yeah,
I'm here because of the platform. Because of what the platform provides. You guys got a hell of an audience, and it's because of the job that you're doing. So I'll get that out the way.
Appreciate that. Thank you. Mission Lock for you. Snoop took a nap on that couch during the show, though.
I smell it.
He said, I smell it.
I smell it. I wasn't going to say nothing. That was y'all business. I was going to keep it there. But I smell something that ain't right. Somebody wasn't right. And I was going to let it fly. I don't know the living situation, if you guys are here overnight or not, but something ain't right. Like, you know, when you sit down on couches with this material, that smell come up.
Yeah,
it's in here. Yeah.
It's in there for life.
It's fine. A little bit of Febreze will knock it out. You guys will figure it out. Just keep on swinging for the fences.
Swinging for the fences. Go ahead.
Well, we talk about that. Do you remember how when you first met?
Where? The first meeting?
Yes.
Where?
We were coming out of some restaurant out here in L.A., and Term just wanted to wrestle with you that night while you getting in your truck.
Yeah, yeah. This, you
him and Term are in the same weight class, though. Term might be a little bit
Term,
heavier.
For some reason, I don't know what it is, man. There's this unannounced code between, like, smaller men that when you see another smaller man,
put hands on him,
you go, I knock him the fuck out. it's a real thing. It's a real thing. Like, and it's just it's in your head. And the other little guy, I know you thinking it too,
because
you
can see him look at
it. Term is that guy. Term is the wrestle. Term is the tussle guy. And you know, the younger days of me in LA, we used to play ball all the time, and that's literally that was Term's. That was his thing.
Come play.
Where you at? Come on.
Yeah.
Term, I don't want to play, man. Come on. Let me see.
This is 2 in the morning.
It's 2 in the morning. We done got liquor in our system. He trying to put me in a full Nelson, so now I got to show that I got some upper body strength. See, people don't actually respect my size. So once you get that little push right there, they can feel it. And it's like, all right, chill.
You really work out.
Yeah,
okay.
chill.
Hey, our first time really hanging out for the day was on the set of Think Like a Man. I think that was, 2011?
That was 10-11.
Yeah.
10-11.
And I tell you, we just shot a basketball scene, but we were in there 3-4 hours. But this dude's energy from the jump, like, he just made it just a nonstop. We had to, like, Kev, stop being funny so we could film. Like, our face hurt, our stomach hurt. He was Ron Artest,
Lisa Leslie.
Rest in peace, Rasul Butler.
That's right, Rasul Butler.
And Shannon Brown.
Yes, yes, sir.
And we shot that thing like a man. Yeah,
that's very funny scene, though.
Hilarious.
Unscripted, basically.
Yeah, freestyle.
Like, it was a loose idea, but you know, the words and stuff wasn't there, so they just let me freestyle.
But you were funny and shit, but then you also, it surprised me because you had some game. And then we started talking about that you could play, and then I saw
I can play. I'm hooping.
But then I saw one of your high school edits where you were in there for not too long and just had a lot of turnovers. You punched the wall, looked like you might have broke your hand.
It was one of those situations where you feel like you're a lot better than what you were at the time. You know, if I didn't see that tape until this day, you couldn't tell me shit. You crazy. I hooped in high school.
Straight up.
9 through 12. I'm going to tell you something. This tape surfaced. I may have had, I think I had 8 turnovers in 20 seconds. And I only ran at one speed. It was, everything was the fastest. It was the fastest that you've ever seen. Fastest.
No pace.
I got good after high school.
Where's the good film, though? Nobody wants to show the
good
film.
That's the thing. I'm telling you, after high school,
I
got
good. No film around.
Like, I played varsity 9 through 12. My senior year, I had an all right year. Mm-hmm. I could play, but it was nothing to really brag about. I think I was honorable mention in the public league. It wasn't like our league was that great. Gratz was the team. They got all the attention. Strawberry Mansion has started to get some. Ronald Flip Murray.
Flip was nice.
He got nasty the late stages of his basketball career. So, you know, if you wasn't in that conversation, Lynn Greer, that was about it. So, man, we didn't get any attention.
Shout out Flip Murray. He was cold.
Flip was a bad boy.
We came
in the
draft at the same time.
He was a bad boy.
Let's get to your upbringing. Born Philadelphia, single parent home. Your story has some similarities to mine from a standpoint of my father too dealt with addiction, cocaine addiction, and my dad was a drug dealer as well. But then
double
dip on both. He's burned it on both sides.
Jesus Christ.
But then also lost my mom to cancer as well in 07. So tell me about your upbringing, how instrumental your mom was in your upbringing, but then also you being able to mend your relationship with your father once he...
Well, just a question for you. How did y'all ask your dad, where's the common sense? Did y'all have that talk? Like,
we have those we have those talks now, but I don't know back then.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, I think the toughest thing for me, probably the biggest smack in the face is when you find out your parent or parents are on drugs. And my dad's thing was a discovery. Everybody else knew but me. You know, I was the only nigga that didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
My brother and them, they all was, your dad on drugs. No, he not. Yeah, he is. He on drugs. And I saw my dad buying drugs from my friends. And that's when it was like, oh, shit.
That's when it was real.
Yeah, that's when it was real. That's when it got real. And then after that, when my dad had the awareness that we knew my dad disappeared, you know, he left. Because I know now, he couldn't stomach the fact that we saw and knew what his reality was. So, disappeared. Then I saw my dad years later. On a train, true story. On a train, I'm going to school. I went to George Washington, and public transportation was the only way to get to school. So I'm literally on the train coming from school, and I'm getting off at Broad Erie, and I saw my dad on a train. Mm. And I'm like, oh, shit, dad. And my dad couldn't stomach that he was still in the same place. Left.
Pushed away. Mm.
So that's when it was like, oh, this is bad. And, you know, I think my brother took it upon himself after a certain period of time to kind of lead the charge and my dad getting help. My brother's older. So from my dad's road to recovery, it was enforced, I can say, by my brother, by their bout. Because even though I knew I'm still oblivious, that's still dad.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Regardless.
It's not hitting me crazy hard. Dad is dad. Mm-hmm. So I don't see the things falling apart. I don't see the true damage that my mom and my brother are witnessing. That's still dad, you know? Okay, I know he's on drugs, but he ain't here. He's doing something elsewhere. He probably getting better. I'm all in the world of denial and crazy assumption. So my dad's return was one of sobriety. So, you know, I've never been the grudge holder.
Right.
My mom was more of the grudge holder. Then my mom got, you know, she got heavily into God, religion, found ways to release that aggression, allow me and my dad to build a relationship. Late stages of my teens, going into 20s, you know, he was up and down with it. But I never judged. I never really held a grudge. So when my dad finally was good, we were good. When he wasn't good, we were still good.
Yeah.
My brothers was different. My brother and my dad, you know, they're still a little different. They're good, but they're, you know, there's still some shit there, but I don't have it in me to hold that.
It's heavy.
That's a lot.
It's heavy.
That's a lot to carry them burdens with you, you know, for the duration of your young adulthood, going into your 30s, you know, 30s, 35. And I know some people deal with it. I'm blessed enough to say that I don't have that.
Right.
I don't have that ability. So me moving forward was all about, hey man, when you good, we're good. and he got good, here's a house. Here's a truck.
Yeah.
You know, here go these grandbabies. Mm-hmm. Here you go, man.
Oh, yeah, we out for a couple of days too, by the way. Hold them.
Yeah. Oh, he's right. I'm literally like, you know, I don't have that that problem. So I think for my dad, I think the happiness from him comes from the ability to stand in his mistakes, live in them, mm-hmm. but know that there is no judgment.
Yeah,
and right. I'm great because of the shit that you did, especially in this monster in LA. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't do drugs, you don't go down that road.
Right.
I'm a completely different animal probably.
Right.
You know, who knows what I'm trying?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Who knows what I'm dabbling in? So I credit a lot of my, you know, reasons to stay away and no, that's not for me to my dad. Yeah. So yeah. I find the positives.
Yep.
And those negatives. Yeah, so when you talk about the upbringing, rough it may have been, but both managed, you know. I'm a mama's boy at heart. She did a great job while my dad was going through his shit of holding down the fort. And me and my brother were raised as two amazing men because of her and her devotion. And my dad came in and cleaned up what he could when he could. Mm-hmm.
You found a safe spot through humor. I think in your comedy act, you're someone who can laugh at yourself, poke fun mm-hmm. at yourself, and kind of really be transparent. How early did that come? Because I know my coping mechanism at a young age was staying with friends. I started smoking weed. That was kind of my getaway. What was your kind of, let me get away from just, although I learned from it, the clouds at a young age?
Well, I mean, one thing we share, we all, you know, we all thugs. So, you know, as a young killer that had to, you know, get it together. Because when I was younger, all I had was these.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So I had to put these up. Yeah, you know, I don't even get into details about that with y'all. No, man, humor was my way to avoid the bullshit. So I knew everybody that was about that life. I knew everybody that was real. You know, we're mm-hmm. talking 15th and Erie. You're talking...
Yeah.
Yeah. You. I'm in the heart of it. Not, mm-hmm. not down the street from it. Not three blocks away. Not 15. No, I'm in the heart of it. Mm-hmm. I'm in the shit. And at this time, this is when Erie Ave probably had the most attention that it's ever had. This is when major figures in the mm-hmm. the world of rap. You know, shouts out to Gilly. At this time, we were being put on because of the individual. So the attention that came with that and the want to prove who and what people were was high mm-hmm. at that time. So the only way to be accepted was through that's the funny boy. That's a little Hart. My brother used to sell drugs. My brother was into the shit. So that's a little Rob Hart brother. That's 40 brother. Mm-hmm. And people just let me be around, but I never overstayed my welcome. In and out. Be funny, but I was home before the lights came on. My mom was very strict. Very, very strict. Very strict. So because I had all these extracurricular activities, I didn't have the same outlets. You know, I didn't have the luxury of staying out all night, just being on the corner, talking shit, joking. I could do it during the daytime. But then at night, I'm either at practice, swim practice. Mm-hmm. The only black nigga that was down there is swimming.
But you can swim, though.
I can swim my ass off.
Because not everyone has a microphone in front of them can swim.
No. The crazy thing is,
what you trying to say, though?
Huh? You can't swim at all.
What are you trying to say?
Can you swim?
I'm just saying, obviously you knew I couldn't for you to say that.
Oh, you say you yeah. do with your shirt on. Good. The shirt and the shoes on. And
I can swim
socks,
as long as
socks
on. Oh, yeah. I can swim just as long as when I get tired, I can stand up.
What does that
so
mean?
So what would you have to swim
six,
if you could stand
feet,
up?
6'8", I can swim in it. Anything.
So you can walk. Feet. You can walk in water.
No, I can swim.
That's not swimming.
I can swim until I get tired. I can't. This is what I can't master, okay? I can't master the dog pedal floating in one place.
The what?
The floating in one place, the little dog.
What'd you
pedal?
Call it?
What's it called? The dog pedal? What's it called?
The doggy paddle?
What is it called? The dog
I don't know,
pedal?
But you said the dog pedal.
Yeah, what is it?
Not that.
It's not the dog pedal?
Jesus Christ, pedal? You ain't setting us back right now. God damn.
Floating in one place, God damn it.
Boy, it's a group of white people going, told you. Right now.
Told you.
He said that. They all said, told you.
Yeah, that's niggas what... don't swim. You know what I'm saying? And we don't skate because we've been skating on thin ice our whole life. So we don't do neither of them.
I had a bunch of extracurricular activities, man. Swimming was definitely one of them. But I've never not been the funny guy. I've never not been entertainment. I've never not been the reason for a laugh. So the world of comedy was, it was always in me. But as far as a job and a title for, you know, that I saw success in, that was a discovery. Mm-hmm. That came later on when the options were brought up to me. But naturally, that was always the reason to be left alone. Nobody really fucked with me because Kev's the cool guy. Mm-hmm. Leave Kev alone. Y'all, this little Rob Hart buddy. Funny as shit. Let Kev come around.
Right.
It was always love.
Funny dudes are always welcome.
Always. Mm-hmm. Always. No problems. Plus, I was a thug. It was the funny combo with the thug.
Combo.
Who were some of the people that inspired you growing up, like shows or comedians?
I mean, I know the answer is always, you know, you want to go to the biggest comedians, but the biggest inspiration is my mom before you can even get to comedy. Because you got to understand drive when you're talking about entertainment, right? Any level of entertainment, any level of accomplishment in life, there's a high level of drive that you need to have in you to attach mm-hmm. to said goal to try to accomplish whatever, right? Are you willing to stay true to it, work on it, and go through the ups and downs to get to whatever the end is? So my mom, the reason why I say she was the inspiration, because without the constant repetitive conversation of start what you finish mm-hmm. or finish what you start or, you know, we don't quit, you know, what we don't do is leave stories untold. I got a bunch of these things in my head from my mom. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't leave room for people to complete the sentences that you left incomplete. Mm-hmm. Finish your sentences. Mm-hmm. Finish the things that you put your mind to. That's always stuck with me. So I'm now able to look at the people that acted as like, oh my God, I wish, you know, Eddie Murphy's the obvious answer. Right. But at that point, I don't have access to Eddie Murphy.
Right.
You see what he's doing, but that's not in my reality. I don't think that's, that don't exist. Man, that's crazy. But these comedians that I do see on a day-to-day that are living life comfortably, man, these guys are working every weekend. These mm-hmm. guys are getting on stage. That's what I want. That's, how do I get that?
Right.
So my individuals, it progressed over time. Turay Gordon, Keith Robinson, you know, these are names that some or most may or may not know, but this was my reality of consistency. Turay Gordon, he was at the Laugh House every weekend. He was a host. He was on stage. This guy was funny as hell. Man, I wish I could tell a joke like that. Keith Robinson, going back and forth from Philly to New York. On stage every weekend in New York. Every comedy club loved him. Every owner knew him. Every comedian showed him love. Damn, I wish. How do I get that? Mm-hmm. Then when you get in that, it's like, oh shit, I'm here. I got that. Mm-hmm. Man, guess who came to the comedy club today? Damon Williams was in here today. Oh my God. Man, George Wallace, Colin Quinn, holy shit. Ray Romano, Seinfeld. Oh my God. I'm starting to see bigger and bigger comedians. I wish. Mm-hmm. Then you get there. Well, now the conversations are changing. Now the Rocks, the Chappelles of the world, mm-hmm. you know, it starts to change. So now when things are closer in arm's reach, your inspiration changes. But I, you know, just giving information, I don't start with the biggest, mm-hmm. or I didn't start with the biggest. JB Smoove, mm-hmm. who does Real Husbands of Hollywood with me. I joke with JB all the time coming up. JB's laughs that he would get were different. I wish I could get those laughs. God damn, how do I get that? You know, Cat Williams. I remember there was a point where I was touring with Cat. Damn, I wish. Mm-hmm. Wish I could get that. Go down the list. Mike Epps, all these people. I was a guy that saw the opportunities from watching simply what was going on in front of me, but I baby stepped it. Mm-hmm. It wasn't the thing that wasn't believable at first. It was the chopping of it. And as I got closer, the different people served as inspiration at different times. You know, and I think you gotta keep doing that. Like right now, Dave Chappelle mm-hmm. acts as an inspiration.
At the top.
I mean, this motherfucker just keeps churning them out. I don't know where the fuck he's getting it from. He just keeps doing it. Mm-hmm. Another special, another this, another that. It's not like I don't work hard. What the fuck is Dave doing? God damn. Dave, what are you doing? I'm in my Jell-O, man. I'm focused.
My Jell-O.
I love it. Yeah. It's inspiration, rock, inspiration. Right. So I love to find drive and reason for self-input from watching, you know, other people grind, other people get after it. Mm-hmm. It's no hate that exists from OK Heart. That's only envy and love.
That's dope.
And I find fire within that.
Obviously, today, being one of the biggest comedians in the world, one of the biggest movie stars in the world, your grind, your struggle, obviously, was tough. Talk to us about your first gig, because I know that didn't start off too well.
Shit, first stand-up gig?
Mm-hmm.
First stand-up gig. First bad one? First bad one is a famous story, Sweet Cheeks. It was a male strip club. I didn't even know at the time.
It was, this show was called Sweet Cheeks.
It's called Sweet Cheeks.
Hold on.
Take what you can get.
Hold on.
You didn't know it was a male strip.
I didn't know it was in Atlantic City.
It was called Sweet Cheeks.
It's called Sweet Cheeks.
Okay.
Very well could have been a place that serves apples. I mean,
fuck no.
You know, Sour Patch Kid. I don't know. It could have been anything. Could have been a candy house for all I know. They said they wanted to have a comedy show. I was one of the comedians. I'm out. I'm going.
I'm there.
At Sweet Cheeks.
Listen, man.
What'd you have to wear?
I performed at a bowling alley, and they was throwing strikes while I was doing punchlines. I can give you bad stories. I did a crab shack. I performed at a crab shack, and I could hear niggas cracking crabs while I was...
Mid-joke?
Yes, man. So the thing with me is... Oh, you got... That's a big one, man. That's a big one, man. You in the back. Can y'all hear me? All right, just checking. You see people picking up crabs, slapping. I done been in some shit. Sweet Cheeks was definitely the worst, though. Sweet Cheeks, it was this raunchy. It was just, it might have been some of the worst, just vulgar people, man. And they didn't want comedy. These people didn't want comedy. Like, it was just a mixture of people that came to drink. And the comedy in the comedy show was the shit that they would give the comedians. That was the comedy. It wasn't the comedians. The comedy was them fucking with the comedians. And it was what comedians are bold enough to go. So, you know, I was never a bitch about it. I'm going to go.
You came with your shit?
Yeah, I'm like, I'm going to go. It's going to be what it's going to be. And the first time was rough. Dude threw a chicken wing at me. That's a true story. Threw a buffalo wing at
connected.
Me.
Connected?
I never forget. Sauce and everything. Pap.
In your face?
Pap. Connected. Flush.
Damn.
Flush. A little sauce got in my eye a little bit.
That shit stung.
Try to man. Now, who the fuck threw it? You know, at the end of the day, I'm a man. Shut up, bitch. You can hear it in the back. Fuck off the stage. Yeah, all right. All right. Y'all can, yeah, all right. You know, politely put the mic back in the stand, walk off. And I remember that was the moment, though. That was the moment where I sat in my car. It was me and this guy named Big J. And, you know, we were the ones.
Right after
like,
you left Sweet Cheeks, you was in the car with Big J?
In the car with Big J. That was his okay. name. I know it sounds fucked up, but this is the truth.
I'm just trying to make sure we stay on track.
I'm not gonna run from it. Tell the truth. You're not gonna have me fucking go to an alternate route based off of this nonsense. I'm gonna stay with it. We in the car. And you know, that was like one of the moments where it was like, fuck this shit, man. Mm. People throwing chicken and shit.
How old are you at this point?
I think I'm maybe 19.
Oh yeah.
19 years old.
Yeah.
You know, this ain't it. It ain't supposed to be this. This is what it's gonna be, you know. $20. Driving up here for $20-$30, some food. And I was like, you know what? I'm going back. I'm gonna go back. And I ended up going back to Sweet Cheeks a couple of times because they had hard times booking comedians. Nobody wanted to go. So they only took the people that would come because the list was small. And I remember the numbers started to grow a little bit, like $50. They start offering more money, $50, $75. And I went. I started just handling the crowd differently. And it got to the point where they started fucking with me.
Mm-hmm.
Showed me love. The host that was once there, he didn't want to do it no more. I said, I'll do it. I'll host. I bring the comedians, and I ended up flipping the room. So the room that didn't like comedy started to love comedy.
Mm-hmm.
And the comedians that didn't want to go, I started to get to come, but I would set the room up better.
Mm-hmm.
So comedians were having successful sets, and I was known as the guy that was running Sweet Cheeks for a minute. But that was my moment of, I'm going to be okay.
Mm-hmm. Find it.
There's no environment that I'm not going to be comfortable in.
Right.
If I found comfort in this.
Right.
And you know, for a while it was going back and forth and just doing that, but that was like my workout room for a minute. And you couldn't tell me nothing. I was happy.
Mm-hmm.
I was happy. But then when I started to go to New York, and then I flipped it and I went mainstream. Well, now you're getting the opposite, right? I'm used to being vulgar. I'm used to really being in your face, yelling, doing X, Y, and Z. Well, I saw that I didn't have to. I could be more reserved. So I had to learn how to flip those rooms. Mm-hmm. And then I found the balance and I would just do both. So when most were staying true to one side, yeah, I was
versatile.
I was doing it all.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how I ended up just saying, okay, no more sweet cheese. I'm just going to New York. And in New York, I found the rooms that were on the same line as Sweet Cheeks, and I would do those, and I would still do the mainstream rooms. And then I kind of figured out the balance in between, so I didn't have to change from this person to this person.
There's you.
And then I could just be myself.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I figured it out.
Mm-hmm.
But Sweet Cheeks was definitely the worst fucking environment I've ever been in. Hit me with a buffalo wing. True story. Never forget it. Fuck my face up. I'm sorry.
How did you come up with your own style? Like, was it just natural?
No, you go through that phase where you try to imitate what you think is good.
Mm-hmm.
I was being a character of what I thought was funny. And J.B. Smooth, once again, shout out to J.B. Smooth, was a big part of that. Chris Tucker, early on in Chris Tucker's career. Chris mm-hmm. Tucker, you know, these people had such an impact that when you watched them, you were like, that's what I got to do.
Right.
I got to do some of that. JB was so physical, I was like, that's what I gotta do.
Mm-hmm.
I gotta be physical. And you're trying to do this stuff, but you're not being yourself. And self is a discovery, right? Like when you finally get comfortable enough to go, I'm funny, me. All I gotta do is be me. Mm-hmm. Let them know who I am, talk about me. It's gonna work. It didn't hit until I was doing longer shows. I started doing these colleges and I was doing like 30 minutes, 45 minute shows, and I was running out of material. I had no more material. All the jokes that I wrote, they were, you know, they were falsified. You ever see somebody, man, I can't stand when
mm-hmm.
black people, but white people, it was a bunch of that shit. And I had nothing. And it was like a 15 minute stretch where I just started talking about my day. Of getting to the school, all the shit that I had to go through. I was in like Bismarck, North Dakota. We had to do a rental car drive. I was in a Dodge Neon driving through a storm, and we barely made it to the show. We was in a motel. But I was just talking about the day. People were rolling
right.
at my natural conversation, but I was being myself. It wasn't an added voice on. It was nothing. And I was like, this is what I need to tap into. This is the sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
And once I figured that out, I kind of hit the ground rolling. And that was around the time with Grown Little Man. I started putting that hour together for Grown Little Man. And that was when I figured out I don't have to be a character of this version of funny that I think exists. It should come from just being myself. Once I hit that, the ball was out the park.
Got it.
I ain't look back.
Coming up in an age that didn't have or wasn't able to use social media and the internet the way we did, how was promoting yourself back then when you're first coming up?
Comic named Dane Cook. Dane Cook.
I remember Dane Cook.
Dane Cook, when MySpace was big, right? MySpace had just hit. And it was all about the page. It was all about your MySpace page. It was all about, you know, comments and going back and forth. I don't even think it was comics. I think it was your inbox. You had like an inbox and people could message you. You could message people. And he was just crushing. You know, he was the biggest guy going at the time. And I found out what he was doing was, you know, he had email lists. He had like email lists, and every time he went back to this place, he would send blast out. I'm coming back. And he built this relationship with these people time after time. And as I was coming up, you know, I believe that people give you a blueprint for you to understand and grow from it. Information is free.
Right.
You know, you choose to use it.
Right.
That's up to you. That's your personal cost. If you don't see the value and free information, well, that's you.
Mm-hmm.
I see the value in information. So I started going to comedy clubs, and I had little cards, information cards. I would leave them on the tables. At the end of my show, I was like, fill out the information cards. Fill them out. People would do it. We would come around. I would pick them all up, and I would put a little paperclip on them, and I would put Cincinnati.
Mm-hmm.
And then we would go to my computer and we would put Cincinnati, put all the emails in. And did that for every city on the comedy club. Now, granted, these are half full rooms. They're not big rooms. But then I'm right back after I just left. So this comedy club tour went like 6 to 8 months. I did them all. All right, it's time to go back out. Let's go the same route that we went last time. Cincinnati, I'm coming back.
Right.
Holy shit, the room grew. Damn, we like 3/4 full. We almost sold out. It ain't selling out. We were like 3/4 full. Mm-hmm. Damn, it's like this everywhere we go. And the people are coming back. All right, well, first things first, we got to get new material. You can't.
Recycle your
You can't shit. Come back and recycle. Mm-hmm. They're coming back. Okay, that's learning lesson number one. Let's write some jokes. Let's get some shit. All right, time to go back. Hit them up again. Now I'm selling out multiple shows. More people are coming out, but these people telling other people.
Mm-hmm.
I got a relationship. I have a relationship with my, this is a fan base. Mm-hmm. This is the definition of a fan base. I got one. It's growing. I need to be consistent with this. I didn't stop that until social media got big. That was my way of connecting. That's how I got to theaters. That's how I got out of comedy clubs. It was from the constant connection and interaction with my comedy fan base. And once social media started to get bigger, well, you no longer needed the email addresses because you had an at name.
Mm-hmm.
So those people followed you. So now I'm just saying, Cincinnati, I'm coming back. And everybody that follows me is looking, and the people from Cincinnati that follow me, well, they all know I'm on social media because I blasted all my stuff out to them. So when I first joined, I got my whole email list. I'm sending all them. Here's my Twitter name. Follow me on Twitter. Well, those numbers started to shoot up. So now I'm just following the same agenda. So social media just gave me access to what I was already working hard to have access to.
Mm-hmm.
I never went away from it. Until this day, I don't go away from it. So whether it's comedy, movie, whether it's something I'm producing, whether it's an event, wherever, I have a direct relationship with my fan base. And I think that's a major key to success in today's time. You know, your ability to market, promote, and not necessarily be available, but just be present to those that want to see your presence. It's extremely important.
Mm-hmm. Starting at Cheeks.
Sweet Cheeks.
A male strip club.
Yeah, male strip club.
I'm just, right. You know, but that's just me being honest with you guys.
Yeah, we appreciate that.
I feel like
always
it's wrong here.
But starting there and eventually, like you said, working your way out of comedy clubs to theaters to now you're doing stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about that process, what you've learned about yourself, and just do you ever have an awe moment? Because both being retired athletes, we did a lot of great things in our career, but you never got to appreciate them until you got a chance to sit back. Obviously, you're still in the mix,
mm-hmm.
daily, routine, grind. Mm-hmm. Do you ever just sit back and like, motherfucker, I just sold out so-and-so.
Motherfucker, I'm chocolate drop.
No, you know what?
Hey, he had to check some people like on social media like 3 weeks ago and lay out all his stats. I was like, yeah, Kev, get that ass, Kev.
You know what, man? I'll tell you the part that you have to like, the part that you got to take two steps back and just refrain from, right?
Mm.
I think the accomplishments are surreal. I can't believe that telling jokes has taken me to this place that I now am in life, in my career, right? There's no real blueprint. You can see what other people have done, but it's not guaranteed that that's going to work for you.
Right.
Right?
Right.
Like I said, it's just information. So what people put on display, you can take in and go, that's dope. They did it this way, or it was done this way. Damn, okay, I want to follow this. I'm going to try this, but then I want to manipulate it to make it my own. You can kind of create your own lane after following a lane, and then you break off into whatever space and maneuver however you very much feel and want to.
Mm-hmm.
It happened so fast. I told you, I was in the comedy clubs, and I was working these email addresses. It was work. Me and my team going to malls, passing out flyers. I was really my man on the street. I did the work.
Right.
So when you look up and they go, oh, shit, you sold out 4 shows at the comedy club. We're going to add 2. Oh, okay, dope. Yo, we're adding, you're at 10 shows for the weekend, huh? What do you want to do? You want to do 3, 3, 3, and 3? I'm at 12 shows on a Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Damn. Wait, what? Does this happen? No. Yo, you, this is crazy. You coming back again next year? I think so. Kev, I want to talk to you about theaters. Okay. Should we do it? Let's try it. Oh, fuck. We just sold out 2 shows. This theater sold out 3 shows. Oh, shit. Man, we doing the theaters. Let's go to arenas. No, not yet. I got to understand this theater shit. I do a run in the theaters. Well, we're doing 3 and 4 shows. Kevin, you got to do arenas. Like, we're missing out on opportunity. No, I'm going to wait. I do the theaters. I write. Then I go to the arenas. Holy fuck. We doing 2 and 3 shows in arenas.
Damn.
So now you look up and you averaging, you know, 30, 40,000 people. This is going through Laugh at My Pain, Let Me Explain, What Now, Irresponsible. Those tours, that's over an 8-year period. Put a 2-year gap in between. My numbers never dropped.
Yeah, you crushed it.
So you're looking at an 8-year run. By the way, it's still not over. Mm-hmm. I just don't have time to go out right now. Mm-hmm. The pandemic and all that stuff, I didn't have time to go out then. Don't fuck this up. That special I did in 4 weeks. I put together in 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I just put an hour together. I was like, yo, pandemic, people need some content. If I get like a little place to work out, I'll put an hour together fast. I did it. Put it out. Mm-hmm. I still very much can go out on the road, but it's like now... Fuck, I now get to look back and go, oh shit. Look at the numbers, Kevin. Look at the fucking numbers. Look at the stadium. I had a microphone. I didn't have
a ball.
I had a microphone for an hour and a half. I did a football stadium.
Crazy.
Goddamn, God. That's a little insane. So I'll be honest, the pandemic really had me sit down, and that's when I got to look back.
Reflect a little.
Because I've been running so fast. I've been haul ass, and I've yet to really sit and look. So this run that was supposed to be a moment of fame, well, I mean, you're 15, 16 years of it now. So from movies to stand-up and everything, it's a little crazy to go, wow, how do we get here? And now that you're here, well, now the game changes. Because now it's not about how you got here. It's about staying there. Mm-hmm. Or are you trying to stay there? Mm-hmm. And it's about the constant conversation attached to you and what you were and what you used to be and what you did and not what you are now. You know what I mean? Like, it's like now you're in a conversation of growth and maturity and life differences, and well, I'm at a different place creatively. Mm-hmm. But people want to, you know, where's this nigga? Well, he and he was 24.
He grew up a little bit.
He was 28. He was 30. I'm 42.
Involved. Yeah.
42. Like, you know, my environment's changed. Mm-hmm. So we had a conversation before, and you know, they were like, what are you going to call the next special? And I was like, I'm going to call it Confused. Like, what, at this point, what do you,
right?
What else do you do? So I now look at it from a different lens, and I'm so envious of Chappelle and where he is because he's found his second gear in creative. He's found that second gear. He was already a star, went away, and then he rebuilt his star. Will Smith was already a star, mm-hmm. went away, came back, rebranded and built his star. That's what stars fucking do. Mm-hmm. Stars know how to be stars.
Right.
That's why I'm a fucking star. Mm-hmm. Watch this. So now it's like, I'm going to do stand up, but I gotta find the thing. I gotta get the next bump of the thing so I can be excited about the thing.
Right.
The movies are getting bigger. But I'm also excited at the fact that I'm producing them. Mm-hmm. I'm creating them. I'm excited that I got a company that I'm a partner to these motherfucking monsters now. That's my excitement. Mm-hmm. Radio, talking, understanding people. Well, that's my excitement.
The business side of the business.
The business side of the business. So, you know, the beauty of fucking getting older is the growth. Right. So when you talk about looking back, I look back at it, but I can't duplicate none of that shit no more.
Right. Because you're not the same person.
I'm not the same. I can't do that shit no more. I may not ever see that level of heat again, but I can find a level of fun in the craft and then find the level of balance that I want to have with where I am in life now. Mm-hmm. But that shit is unheard of. If you go look at those fucking numbers, mm-hmm. people have no idea. It's number ones across the fucking board. Tours, comedies, biggest. Go look at it. It's unheard of. Mm-hmm. When you go look at the list for stand-up specials in the top three, top 10, I'm in there 3 times. Mm-hmm. That's stupid. I ain't getting back there. I go sit my stupid ass down on the stool and figure it out.
All right.
Because I can't chase that. So the pandemic made me realize that. It made me just sit in the moment of being blessed enough to have seen that and now find new success in what this stage presents.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean? That for me is the most mind-blowing thing about looking back. And you know, for you guys, I'm quite sure it's the same. Like you said, y'all both retired. I watched the goddamn Malice in the Palace shit. You forget I watched it on TV. Mm-hmm. My appreciation for the moment now is different.
Yeah.
Looking back at it, you go, that was history. That's a moment in history. Goddamn, I remember that. Mm-hmm. I was alive and witnessed history. That's excitement for me. Mm-hmm. Being able to look back and reflect on things like that. And in life, in my career, that's where I'm at mentally. And finding the new gear, the new reason, that's the priority. But it's not until I get that I'm going to do that.
Mm-hmm. Your time.
I just think about all that coming from Paper Soldiers.
Paper Soldiers.
Classic.
Paper Soldiers.
Man.
I'm going to tell you who's going to love this. Shouts Classic. Out to Dame Dash.
Shout out to Dame.
Shouts out to Dame Dash for Paper Soldiers and a fucking brilliant accident. Right place, right time. I'm at a comedy club. Dame just happens to be sitting in the comedy club. Sees me perform. Yo, that dude funny as shit.
Come be in the
Yo, movie. You want to do a movie? They didn't have the movie fucking together at the time.
Right.
You just a dude telling me something. I don't know what to believe. Cool, yeah. Let me get your number. Follow through. The movie ends up happening. Paper Soldiers, the reason why I got tapes, audition tapes, pilots.
But you know, that's a classic.
It's a fucking hood classic.
A hood classic.
Mm-hmm. Shout out to Smokey. Shout out to Beans.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I mean, Charlie Murphy, RIP.
That's what, early to us, 2001, 2002-ish?
Shit, yes, that's very early 2000s.
Yeah.
2000, maybe 2000, 2003, 2004.
I think I had just gotten the league when that shit dropped.
2003, 2004. Mm. All of my classics in the beginning were successful bootlegs and flops. Soul Plane was supposed to be the biggest movie ever. And ended up being the biggest bootleg of all time.
But it's still classic, though.
It's a classic. That's what got me the comedy club gigs.
Opportunity, yeah.
So you take that movie away, and if it doesn't get bootlegged the way that it did, it's not going to have the box office success that it had.
Right.
The movie traveled because of the bootleg market. Mm-hmm. So my fame grew from the bootlegs.
Real shit.
It was lucky.
Right.
I got fucking lucky.
Great.
Right projects, right time.
What was the transition for you like coming into acting early on from being a comedian?
Another accident. You don't see it happening. I wish that I could fucking have the best stories of this was my plan. And this is when I knew it would happen.
Mm-hmm.
All right place, right time.
Were you Paper acting Soldiers. Before Dame saw you with Paige Paper?
No.
So you wasn't acting before then?
No.
Yeah.
It's the first thing I've ever did. First camera that was ever put in my face.
How crazy, Paper dog. Soldiers.
First camera I ever put in my face. First lines that somebody ever told me to read back. No fucking like real practice was ever put into the craft. Nothing. I was thrown in there and I just so happened to do the job. After doing that, it was, oh shit, this is what happens after. Because you hear about it, you see it. Remember Def Jam, comedians did Def Jam and the ones that really popped, they went on to be movie stars, mm-hmm. right? You go and you really look at the trajectory that's attached to comedy, Well, comedians were supposed to pop on these big comedy shows, be it Def Jam, Comic View at the time. Mm-hmm. And from that, you were supposed to get a TV show or a movie. If you were good enough, one of those opportunities would come. So if you really go down the list, look at Bernie Mac, the Bernie Mac Show. Look at Cedric the Entertainer. Look at Steve Harvey. Look at D.L. Hughley. Martin. You look at Martin Lawrence. Mm-hmm. You know, Chris Tucker, Mike Epps. Mm-hmm. Kat, you look at these things. They all of the big pop came from that first bang. And if your first bang was correct and if it was loud enough, this is what was supposed to come with it. Mine didn't happen like that. I didn't get that. I saw other people get that, but it didn't seem like it was gonna be my reality. I was doing those.
Right.
I did the Def Jam later on, but by the time I did it, it wasn't Def Jam.
Right.
The big bang behind the name wasn't there. It was still Def Jam. Mm-hmm. But you said it like that, Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
Back in the day, it was Def Jam.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta see Def Jam. It wasn't that.
Right.
BET Comic View. I did it. It wasn't Comic View.
Mm-hmm.
Ricky Smiley.
Mm-hmm.
When they had it, when those big names were going through it, it was different. But by the time I came along, it was, you know.
Watered down a little
It was
bit.
Just watered down a little yeah. bit. The opportunities weren't the same. So I didn't know where that opportunity was going to come from. Mine came from Caroline's Comedy Club, Dame Dash seeing me. I do Paper Soldiers. I get a tape. I end up getting other auditions. I somehow auditioned my way into several pilots that failed. That's another story of just failed fucking pilots. I go do Montreal Just for Laughs Comedy Festival. When I do the festival, I get a lot of heat from the industry. This is Hollywood, mainstream Hollywood. Get a deal. This is supposed to be it. Get a TV show. TV show gets picked up. I'm about to be a star. I got my show. Here it comes. Show fucking gets dropped. While I'm at the upfronts are where they announce your new TV show.
Mm-hmm.
They're about to announce me, I'm about to go up. Somebody put their hand on my chest. Mr. Hart, wait a minute. I'm sorry, you're not going up. Somebody be back to talk to you. My manager comes running back. They're not picking up the show. What the fuck? They just said this. Wait, but I'm here. What you mean not picking it up? I'm in New York. I flew the whole cast down, used my money. This is the biggest moment of my life. What do you mean? I'm ABC, TGIF. Thank God it's Friday. The big house. Kevin, you got to move. What?
Oh, that's crazy.
Right here. One hand on this. You got to move. You, Kennedy's, you're up.
That like that. The business. Like,
that moment's over. All right. Then Soul Plane comes. Soul Plane's it. Here it comes. Soul Plane get bootleg. God damn. What's going on? He's done. We're not giving no more chances. That was my starring movie. That was my starring TV show. Both flopped. I went back to stand up, grinded, stayed true to the road. My numbers got big. Will Packer saw me at an airport. Once again, fucking accidental success. I just so happened to be coming while Will Packer's gone. At the time, Will Packer did Stomp the Yard. I believe that he did Takers. I believe that Takers was the movie with Idris Elba,
T.I.
Mm-hmm. I think that was his other one.
Yeah.
And he had another one. He had one more that he had did with Clint Culpepper and Screen Gems. And he said, dude, I got a movie for you. I heard about all the stuff that you're doing on the road and comedy. I got a movie called Think Like a Man. Keep in mind, I've been doing all these little guest spots in these movies, but nothing's sticking. Along Came Polly, Scary Movie 3, 4. I mean, I'm just in shit. Like,
mm-hmm. Long Kim Polly was funny as fuck.
It's funny, but I'm just in it. Like, yeah. I don't. It's yeah. not like I'm right. an actor right. in it. I'm just in it. Like, these are all blurbs and moments. I'm like, well, this is what it's gonna be. I'm going back to comedy because this don't look like it's gonna be it. Will Packer, I thought he was just another producer talking. Calls me back. Think Like a Man. And you want to do it? I'm in. Think Like a Man becomes the biggest success ever, and I popped in a movie. I had a great cast, and that cast set me up. They just kept giving me lobs all day.
How lobs. High was the hoop you was dunking on?
I mean, well, this time, you know, this is probably when I was in my height prime.
Your prime?
Yeah, I was about 5'4".
My height prime.
I was about 5'4" and a half while we was filming that movie.
Throwing lobs on 8 foot hips. It was like eight dunking them shits like Shaq.
But you know, we had a great cast. Taraji, Gab, Megan, Michael Ealy, Romany Malco, Jerry, Gary.
Our sweet mate.
Gary Owens. I mean, I hope I'm not leaving anybody out, but Tim Story directed. And this movie, it blew. Movie was $12 million to make. We ended up doing like 90 plus million in the box office. All of a sudden, people think Kevin Hart's the guy. Well, I've been around for a long time.
Right.
I didn't just come out of nowhere. But now, Will Packer say, I got another movie for you. All right. What is it? Ride Along. All right. Me and Cube. Well, the script been around for years. They could never crack the code. Cube figures out that I'm into it. Cube puts his hand on it. He's a great producer, shaped, molded, managed it correctly. Next thing I know, Ride Along happens. Movie costs $20 million to make. We do $150 in the box office. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit. People fucking with OK Hart. They come back. You want to do another Ride Along? I sure fucking do. When?
What you mean?
what? When? Will Packer go, well, before we do that, we're going to do a movie called About Last Night. Mm-hmm. Me and Regina Hall. We just keep on knocking out these movies. And I just keep on hitting.
That's his celebrity crush.
Don't say her name too much.
Regina Hall?
Yeah. That's his celebrity crush.
Get out of here. You know, I'm working with her right now. We're doing a movie called Me Time.
Yeah, tell her I said, if you don't mind.
Come on, man.
He's getting red. He's getting blushing. Can you believe it?
His whole demeanor just changed. Everything just changed.
He went from a thug to a teddy bear.
Yeah, it just got real weird over there. Very weird.
I say, don't say her name too much around
me. I'm going to tell you, said hi. But Regina Hall, pound for pound, funniest female on camera. Nobody, and I say that confidently. Nobody can hold a match to Regina. So now I'm getting these partners and everything's going correctly. Well, domestic, we're crushing. How do I get international? Me and Will Ferrell, we go do Get Hard. After that, me and DJ, we go do Central Intelligence. So it just kept on growing and getting bigger. But I will give a shout out to my partner, my brother, Will Packer, because when we knocked the first one out the park, nobody taught me to produce or what to do next. He saw that we did an amazing job in this. He went and created and found these opportunities, and he kept on bringing them. I did about 6 movies with Will Packer. Back to back to back to back.
Nah, it broke, don't fix it.
Will's dope.
I didn't change it at all. Till this day, me and Will, we pride ourselves on still working together, still developing projects, still producing together. But all the knowledge and understanding that I have for that world, it came from Will Packer. Taught me the game inside and out.
You named 3 big names that I kind of want to touch on real quick. First, Will Ferrell. What was it like working with him?
Funniest guy.
Please tell me how hard was it to get through your lines with him, bro?
Will Ferrell. Will Ferrell is the funniest. He may be the funniest person on 2 feet. I'm talking naturally. Classic. I'm talking showing up from showing up to work to going home. Nicest guy in the world. But I'm talking a different gear with funny. There's nobody close. No, nobody close. Will would show up, like everything was a bit. So you got to figure out that he's in a bit. Like when you show up at work, he's like, morning, you eat breakfast? I'm like, no, I ain't eat breakfast. Oh, why not? I didn't want breakfast. You gotta eat breakfast. I don't. I don't wanna. Not if I want to. You gotta. I'm like, no. Like, you know, I'm talking regular. He's in a bit though. He's just gonna see how long I go back and forth. He went on with this breakfast conversation. He's like, I'm not gonna start till you get something. I'm like, what? You gotta put something on your stomach.
Put something on your stomach.
Yeah, I'm not gonna start working with you till you put something in your stomach because you're not gonna be your best without breakfast. And he starts fucking going, Greg! Bring Kev some breakfast. Load him up. Load him up. And he like, bring this fucking plate. And it's got like everything on it. Pancakes, oatmeal. Yeah, get in there.
I dig in.
He's fucking funny, man. There's nobody close. Nobody close to Will Ferrell.
I love it.
Nobody close.
The Rock. I love your guys' dynamic because there's just such a big physical difference. But you guys play off that so well in everything you do.
DJ's a talented guy And we get along so well because we find similarities in how we approach the craft, right? Like we have a mutual respect and understanding for where we've come from to where we are now. And when we met, DJ was having crazy international success. I was having crazy domestic success, right? So his road to becoming that international movie star, it was clear. Like he was on his way. On the domestic side, I was crushing. Mm-hmm. So we met, I think we met at like it was an MTV Movie Awards. We met backstage and we talked and we was like, dude, we gotta figure it out. We gotta do something together. And we were true to that. We tried to figure it out. And the reason why, because we wanted those two things to combine. And that's what Central Intelligence was about. Central Intelligence was about us coming together and trying to find a comedy that could take us over the water internationally while fulfilling the need for comedy domestically. Because at the time, you know, comedy was low key dying. Like, mm-hmm. you know, if you go look back at that time frame in comedy, there weren't a lot of successful comedies. You had Wahlberg's movies with Ferrell that were crushing. You know, you had me and Packer's movies that we were doing. Mm-hmm. And you know, the hangovers that came mm-hmm. A couple times, far few and in between, were crushing. But the attempt for comedy from so many others, it wasn't doing well. So international, they didn't think that it could translate, especially if you had, like, you know, people of color in it. Mm-hmm. So our reason for doing that was to show that we're on the opposite side of that conversation, that we could very much do it. Central Intelligence ended up being our reason for continuing the relationship. We had a great time filming it, crazy success, and then we went on and kept it going.
Jumanji's and your weight room sessions where you're getting fake blood and putting chains around your neck and the
whole. Right. I've been carrying them ever since.
It's his secret weapon.
My back hurts from carrying Dwayne the Rock Johnson.
Yeah. You didn't say DJ. Rock, you said DJ.
Right. That means you're tight.
That's the homie.
That means the homie. You're anybody, obviously you're coming up and you're a star in your own world, but then you're crossing into this other world. Anybody you were in awe working with for a second until
Regina Hall.
Regina Hall.
I'll go behind the lens and I'll say Donna Langley from Universal. Who just a monster when it comes to business. And the way that she worked her relationships with talent to execs to other studios, I was blown away by her approach to the business craft, right? And what I learned from her, without her probably even knowing it, was the true world of marketing, PA, promotion development. Her and Peter Kramer. I'm going to shout out Peter Kramer too. That Universal identity at that point served as amazing partners for me and really helped elevate my success. So for me, it wasn't about the talent. It was about the understanding of the business. Because my thing is, I don't want to be a work for hire. Mm-hmm. How do I become a partner? So I was really trying to attach myself to the brains that could really help this partnership. And I would say Universal, Donna Langley, Peter Kramer, Ron Meyer, Jeff Shell, that whole group at the time, they allowed me to really generate that partner-like relationship to the point where now, moving forward, fast forward to where I am now, company and everything built, well, I'm a partner. So now I'm with Netflix. But the knowledge and stuff that I have and the company and foundation that we've built at Heartbeat is one that's put us in position to execute. So, you know, the movies and stuff that we're doing with Netflix are amazing, but all that knowledge and stuff came from the information and I can say, like, love that I got from Universal. So that's who I was envious of.
That's who
showed me the business world. Packer too, because he was in that bubble.
You touched on what I was heading to next. Outside of just being the talent, now you're in the business of the business. So talk to me real quick about the three companies you founded: Heartbeat Productions, Laugh Out Loud Network, and Heartbeat Ventures.
Mm-hmm. Hove inspires me. Jay Brown inspires me. And It's because outside of the thing that they did, they found new success in being in the rooms that we weren't supposed to be in. Mm-hmm. Right?
Which is huge.
It's fucking massive. So you don't know about these rooms that exist, right? You don't, I'm talking about our culture. We're not privy to certain environments because mm-hmm. they don't exist for us. They're far few and in between. But when it comes to that other side of revenue, when it comes to the other side of business relationships, well, the success that's over there is over there for a reason because it's all connected. And I was like, how do I get there? How do I get over there? What are the moves that people are truly making? And what is it that I'm not seeing or that I'm not getting? What did other people not see or get? And not on purpose, what wasn't given to them?
Right, the opportunity.
For them to understand that existed. And I learned it was all about ownership. You know, what can you own versus not own? How much can you actually control? What IP can you develop? What are your resources to control your world, your brand? And I started to figure out ownership within myself. And I used the ownership within myself to find ownership within my entity. And that entity became another entity. Mm-hmm. Because I figured out, well, here's film, here's production.
Let me get this,
but this can be distribution. Mm. This can be streaming. Holy shit. This can be audio. Oh my God. This is another world, you know? Me and Charlamagne, we just started a company with Audible, where we created a company. Audible acts as our partners, but we own this company. And we were like, well, in the world of audio, especially within books, there's a gap between our culture and the rest of the world that's listening to books. And why is that? I don't think anybody's telling the right stories or giving the right material, the right opportunity for us to truly engage in the world of audio reading, right? Which is listening while you're working or doing whatever. Favorite. So Charlamagne and I came up with a great concept. We executed it, but these all act as entities. Heartbeat Ventures. Well, investing is real. You know, once again, our culture, this information isn't given to us about money, about financial gain, right? Financial literacy is real, but it's also because of void. So I got great partnerships. Chase Bank is my real partners. All right, well, we can do our job in trying to figure out this financial literacy gap. Let's go to communities, give the information. At the same time, well, within Heartbeat Ventures, I now have access into these other rooms. Well, we invest in the right things. We back the right companies. Our growth becomes high-level growth with awareness and understanding that allows other people to see what I've done, to see that it's not something that's impossible. It's about getting the information. So now that I have it, I give it. So all of these things act as my ecosystem, my brand. Literature, audio, movies, TV, distribution, right? Then that branches off into ambassador roles and other companies that you can own. So what else do I want to do? All right, well, I'm getting in the world of alcohol. If you have to do that, I'm going to fucking release a goddamn amazing brand. That's TBD that's coming out. What else can I do? Well, what do I fucking like? I like watches. Okay, well, I need to fucking figure out my watch relationship. Me and AP are going to launch something amazing. Okay, within fragrance and the world of fragrance, lotions. Well, I'm a guy that I like to be fucking clean. I like to smell good. Mm. I like products. Well, if these things exist and this is what I use, why can't I embed them in my ecosystem? So many people are afraid to not do things because of the response.
Right.
What you don't realize is that without no effort, there's no reward. I'm heavy on the effort. Mm-hmm. So all of those entities that exist are all based off of effort. And, you know, I've been blessed enough to create a crazy ecosystem with a great team. And, you know, until this day, we seem to be riding. But that's my priority now. Growing and having something that stands crazy, crazy, crazy high at the end of the day that my family, when it's all said and done, they take and they then do.
That's yours.
Yes, that's ours. That's like yours, this. That's right. What doesn't happen.
Right.
Right. We don't know the world of grow and sell. We know the world of hire and get hired. Mm-hmm. But we should be a part of the grow and sell conversations as well. And I'm starting to see them happen more and more. But when I look at Tyler, when I look at Oprah, when I look at Hove, when I look at, you know, Beyonce, who's doing amazing shit as well. Well, you know, these conversations are only attached to like five or six. Puff, think about it. You gotta struggle to get to like eight names for us. It's a struggle. And that's a problem. So the more that people kind of adapt this understanding and level of attempt within gaining information, I think the more we'll see doors just fly open.
I agree.
That's where I'm at with it now.
We've learned how precious life is, I think, since this pandemic and friends and family we've lost and celebrities we've lost.
Absolutely.
September 1st, 2019, you were in a bad car accident. Talk to us about that day and the experience and what you learned from it.
I mean, it's the day I almost died, but the day I woke up, right? Like, that's when the priorities changed. That's when life was different, you know? Are you valuing the right things? Do you really value the correct things? And the correct things, of course, are your loved ones, your family. And there's moments where you overlook that because you're so caught up into the job, the money, the success. Mm-hmm. And you sometimes make your family secondary to all the moves that you got to make out here. The accident / pandemic is the longest I've ever sat down in my life. But it's the best time that I've ever had because I got to see what matters the most. And the value that came from that was prioritizing them and their needs in a way that I never have. And I think this is the beauty of getting old, right? The beauty of getting older is, yo, I'm going to step in a lot of shit. I'm going to mess up a lot of shoes. And that's okay.
Yep.
I'm okay with that. I don't live in this world of false reality of perfection. And I think somewhere the lines, I talked about this before, the lines have gotten blurred in today's time. Like, you know, people are searching for that thing that it don't exist. I'm fine with my fuck ups.
Mm-hmm.
I'm fine with every last one of them.
Yep.
And I love what comes from it because the person that you are and the conversations and stories that I'm able to share with this group of four, these fucking four people that look at me like, yo, dad, that's dad. Like, I'm able to share some shit, good, bad, ugly, that can hopefully put them in position to do the right thing in life. And even if they don't, they'll be fine because I know that I'm doing my job and owning shit when I do it, learning from shit when I can, educating myself when it's free, being okay with being flawed, showing that it's okay to get better. All of the things that we struggle with in life, if I can be a product of that and be a better display to them, I take that every day of the week.
Mm-hmm.
The accident, that was the light bulb of making sure that I'm doing that correctly. Because when you want to go, you want to go, you come back and it's movie night, you mistake that as parenting sometimes. Hey, it's Tuesday. We eating dinner, everybody at the table. You got 2 hours and everybody ate. You mistake that as parenting. The pandemic was, you know, you're in it.
Got real. Mm-hmm.
The kid was fucking home every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every goddamn day was a conversation. So, you know, I took a lot of good out of it. And, you know, it's unfortunate that it had to come that way. But I take those messages from that big man upstairs, however they come. That was a message that I needed to hear.
Talk to us about your health and fitness, your workout routine, and boss, Everly, someone who trains both of us. There goes your coffee. The relationship you have with him, too, because I think that's such a special. He's a great dude. I've been training with him for a few years now, but you took it to another level. And talk to us about that.
I can say with Boss,
I've been trying to get Jack in there. He won't come fuck with us, but I've been
Boss,
trying to come
Boss, with. You know what Boss is? Boss is a friend, a brother, who took an opportunity of training and brought value to me in a space that I never saw value coming. All of my health and wellness success, all of the business that's come from that, the money that's been made, Ronald Boss Everline has led the charge and has been a major part of that. The idea of working out and getting in shape, Boss. The consistency of why and the conversations that come with it in the morning and it being bigger than just the workout it being something for the mind too, boss. The idea of financial health and financial fitness, combining the two, if we can get you in shape over here, we can get you in shape over here, boss. Chase, Nike, boss, boss. Me, Fabletics, the success from Fabletics, the creative that comes with me now is Fabletics, the face of men's, and our growth is insane. What we're doing, me and boss. Mm-hmm. The idea of comfort mixed with athleisure, the ability to make the decision of just being better for yourself, me and boss. Boss's idea, man. Hey, we don't want to reach all these people that want to be great. Kev, you can reach these people right here that just don't know, like, that they can or that they should. That's who I message and go to. Mm. Boss. Boss is a valuable asset of creativity. And he's turned into an amazing businessman. And that's my brother. We done been through it. We done threw blows. We done argued to the top, to the top level of arguing. But I would not have it any other way.
That's your brother.
When you talk about Heartbeat Ventures, boss, I mean, boss now sits on boards at some of the biggest companies. I won't put his business out there too much. Boss sits on some of the biggest boards that you would not even imagine. I am a Haley, what's my position at Hydro? I'm a creative director for Hydro, right? Who are amazing partners of mine. We have a roll machine and we're doing great business. These opportunities come and have came because of boss. Because of boss. Advisory boards, health and wellness, like, it's insane. But because of the knowledge that I've gained from that man and the partnership that we've created, he's become more than just a trainer. He's now a business partner. He is a real asset to this ecosystem that I have. And he's done a great job. You know, I can only credit him for creating the opportunity that he now has, because it wasn't given. I didn't know it existed. Mm-hmm. He found a lane, showed me what we could do, and we started to do it. And the rewards came from it. So shouts out to Hog, AKA Wreck-It Ralph. You ever see Wreck-It Ralph?
Yeah.
Look at Wreck-It Ralph, then look at Ball's face.
at his face. I'm gonna call him that shit tomorrow.
Best courtside story as a fan watching the game and interacting with a player.
I got a lot. Best one? I say one that backfired. Harden's is pretty.
You are known sideline troll.
Yeah. I should talk. By the way, none of them will. None of them went in my favor.
None of them in your favor?
Harden and Philly. Harden gave me 50. He didn't get the Sixers 50.
He gave you 50?
He gave me 50 and said to me directly, I'm gonna give him fucking 50 because you won't shut up. Fuck out of here. He gave us 50. D-Wade in the playoffs, second half, gave us 27. I did that. I'm responsible for that. I'm definitely responsible for that. No, I definitely am. The biggest one is we're in the playoffs against the Celtics. It's a road game. I fly to Boston. You know, this is the year we're supposed to get it done. Like, this is the year where, you know, I'm very hyped that we're going to get it done. This is when Kawhi and the Raptors, they hit us with the last second shot.
So you had Jimmy on the team that year?
Man, go to Boston. Motherfucking Celtics, we blowing them out. Killing them. I'm talking shit to Celtics fans. Shut up. Everybody shut up on course. That's right. Boston sucks. I'm going at it. They booing me. Woo. Fuck y'all. going at it. Second half game, just keep getting closer and closer. What's going on, man? Come on, man. Y'all got to do something. The crowd starts saying, fuck Kevin Hart. Fuck Kevin Hart. You know, they done came back, got the lead. I'm like, that's enough. Like, come on, man, seriously. At some point, it got to the point where I was like, I don't feel safe walking out of here.
I need to leave early.
I go to get up. It's like 6 minutes left in the fourth quarter. I go to get up, walk out. Boom! Fuck Kevin Hart. whole arena was chanting, fuck Kevin Hart. I was like, well, I'm going to stop going to the games for a minute. Just let this cool off. I don't want this to stick to me.
Yeah.
So, you know, then I didn't go to a playoff game for a minute because I'm superstitious. So I was like, I'm gonna stick out of it for a minute. And then I ended up going back, man, and I just can't help. I got to talk shit. I have to talk shit, especially because I know all the players. Mm-hmm. I got to talk shit. Mm-hmm. And I kill them, too. I kill them. Carmelo, I've definitely hit Carmelo. I told Carmelo he had prosthetic legs. who else have I hit hard? AD, I've hit
Ron
AD
got
hard.
You good when he took your drink out your hand and gave it to Drake.
Gave it to Drake. Yeah, Drake, that's all. All Star Game is fun though. It's not malicious. Yeah, I'm not malicious at the All Star Game. It's a good time. It's a real good time at All Star. Regular season, if
it's
I'm
real.
There,
it's real.
Yeah, I'm coming at you.
You're in game mode.
I'm saying everything I can. I feel like I'm out there on the court.
These count.
Yeah, these count. I'm hitting you with real. You're gonna laugh because you don't see him coming. I told AD his eyebrows was a headband. Harden. I said Harden is on hormone pills. Look at his chest. You know, this is when he was a little bigger. He's a little bigger. He's on hormone pills. Check him now. I just throw out the shit. Draymond, I'll go back and forth with. Draymond can talk some shit back though.
Yeah.
Draymond's fun.
How much shit you gonna talk this year though with your team?
Real quick, thoughts on Ben Simmons and in that situation, because you're a big Philly fan.
I'm a big Philly
so.
Fan. I have great thoughts on Ben Simmons. I'll say this on record. Ben Simmons is a fucking star. Mm-hmm. Philadelphia, man, we're a different city.
Y'all boo Santa Claus.
Yeah, man, I saw Philadelphia, a friend of mine, the guy I'm talking about, Big J, that you try to talk shit out. His real name is Jay Oakerson. Big J used to have a joke about a dog
that's
at the
car with after you got sweet cheeks.
Yeah, that's why I said his full name. Jay used to have this joke where he was at a football game and halftime, the guy got a frisbee. He just throwing it. The dog just supposed to be catching the frisbee. Dog dropped it a couple of times. They start booing the fucking dog. It's a dog.
They don't play.
Philadelphia is just a different city, mm-hmm. man. And you know, look, you got to let players play like they play. Like he got there by playing how he plays. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, this is a three shooting time in the NBA. That ain't Ben. He's not that guy.
Right.
He's not that guy. Now, because of the media and how they, you know, position things, well, somehow we forgot about all the good that he did. Wasn't he an all-star?
Mm-hmm.
Wasn't he all defensive team?
All defense, $100+ million.
Like,
contract.
I mean, what are we talking about here? So, you know, you get to this stage in the playoffs where the lights are on. I understand it. People don't want nothing but results, and that results should come in a win. But I'm telling you guys, as a point guard, that man stands at 6'10".
Mm-hmm.
As a 6'10 point guard, if you're telling me that that's not a valuable asset, then I don't know basketball. I mean, I know him. I think he's young. He's a great dude. He's got a great fucking future and a great career ahead of him. And for him, this is nothing but a time to bear down and each year show progressing. But you can't not, I don't like that in this time today, we forget so fast.
Oh, so, man, come on, man.
We forget so fast. Like, that's what this generation prides themselves on. Oh, what?
Hmm?
When? What do you mean when? He's. Do you know what all defensive team is? Do you know what that means? Do we know what an all-star or what it takes to become an all-star?
Thanks.
Do we understand that? Or do we just throw it out the window?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think with him you do that. And I think, you know, granted, they're saying that he wants out. I don't know. I've talked to him, so I'm not going to put business out there. But wherever he goes, wherever he ends up, Ben Simmons is a fucking star. And whoever gets that goddamn, that fucking potential and that beast of a man, oh, well, you're going to see the bang for your buck.
Right.
You know, for us, I think we still got strength. We still got prime time fucking heat, you know, Joel. It's Joel Embiid. He's the best fucking big man in the league.
Yep.
I love Tobias. I love the role that these came in and presented and played. I'm curious to see if Ben goes, who we will bring and try to pick up. But, you know, Doc Rivers, as a coach, he's going to get you to the places where you got an opportunity, right? We're going to have an opportunity. I think the question are, what are the other pieces that we're going to add to this particular puzzle? But I'm a Sixers fan regardless. I'm a Ben Simmons fan regardless. And I know the city of Philadelphia is very tough. We're hard on all. Mm-hmm. Not some, but all. Mm-hmm. And it's not like anybody can say they're a stranger to it. Mm-hmm. You know, you can go to the greatest that have come from our city. They've all heard the conversation in mouths of Philadelphia fans. Right. Iverson mm-hmm. has heard the conversation of Philadelphia right. fans. I mean, yeah. it's what we are built and known for. I just wish him the best, and I hope that wherever his next opportunity is the right one for him. Mm-hmm. So I think he's talented
definitely.
As well.
Definitely. Shout yep. out, Ben.
Definitely talented.
Quick hitters, last few questions. First thing to come to mind, let us know. Top five comedians of all time, in your opinion.
Top five comedians of all time. Eddie Murphy, in no particular order.
Yep.
Eddie Murphy, Dave Chappelle, Chris Rock, Jerry Seinfeld. I'm going to say my last one. Damn, I think I'm going to have to give my last one to, I'm going to say Bernie Mac. And the reason why I'm going to say Bernie Mac is because Bernie Mac, it was a toss up between Bernie Mac and Martin Lawrence. Bernie Mac made vulgar innocent. Mm-hmm. As vulgar, as angry as it came off.
That's well said.
There was a level of innocence to it, right? And in his prime, what I would hope that people will remember most is the true subject of what he was talking about. He was talking about his love for these kids.
These kids.
That he took in. Mm-hmm. Stepsister on drugs and all of this shit. It all had a dark tone to it, but it all centered around
love.
His love mm-hmm. for these things. So I think it's an unbelievable talent when you can mirror the two and pull a wool over a crowd's eyes to not see the true genius in what you're doing. And those subjects that he talked about, he's the only one that I think could have pulled that off. And the reason why it's like Martin is right there. Martin, I talked to Martin on my podcast, and I made Martin aware of, Martin is the reason for the comedic stars of yesterday and the day before, and some that are still able to be stars now. And what Martin and Russell Simmons did was create an environment where a simple arm around the shoulder or a simple come back out here
does so much.
Meant that you were the fucking guy. Mm-hmm. A simple nah, 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 come here, man. Y'all give it up again for my boy. Mm-hmm. Martin saying that you are his boy.
Stamped you.
It gave you all the credentials that you ever needed.
Yeah.
So Martin Lawrence's alignment with comedy and these people that we all are so invested in, you know, is surreal. It's one of the biggest things for me in my career is like, damn, I love where I am, but the comedy moments that I was around for in the beginning of my career, but I was never able to do because of where I was, it's like, damn, if I got to see any of that, it would be ridiculous. And I'll say one more, because I got to put the attachments to it, the way I fucking think. Chappelle's operating at a different level right now. Mm-hmm. Chappelle is now operating at a different frequency that we've never seen in comedic talent. He is becoming a freedom of speech advocate while still being funny, while being as controversial as you can be, while not doing TV or movies, and only doing what he wants to do. He only does what he wants to do. Stand up on his terms, his fucking time, his place.
His backyard sometimes.
His backyard. Dave is now bringing the comedians of comedians
to Ohio
mm-hmm. the middle of nowhere, into what he feels is the best and safest place for comedy.
Love it.
It's groundbreaking what he's doing. It'll never be duplicated. You'll never fucking see it again, because there's only one person that has the ability to be loved by every person in this fucking craft to say, I gotta go fuck with Dave. Mm-hmm. He's on a different frequency. Chris Rock is up there because it's consistency. Once again, people fucking forget, you overlook. Can't be a stand-up comic without constantly recreating yourself. I'm talking about Chappelle because he recreates himself, right? Look at this list. Well, when you talk about material, well, how much are people giving you new versions of it? How many specials are you really seeing from these comics? How many? How many are they putting out? Good, not good, whatever. What's the attempt in recreation? That's what I envy. Not doing what you know worked. What's the fucking attempt in doing the thing that you think could work again? Chris Rock. Fucking Chappelle. Comes to new hours, new content, whatever. Well, we're going to get in there. May work, may not, but we're not afraid to box. That's why that go. That's why my list goes there. Mm. It's a great answer, by the way.
Fucking well explained.
Fucking
well explained. Well explained.
It's a great answer.
I don't think anyone's ever explained their answer as well. You just did.
If you could sit courtside of any game in history, what would it be? Which one would it be?
Any game in history. Mm-hmm. I would say when Kobe had 81 against the Raptors, so I could just talk to Jalen.
Right.
He said just to talk to
Jalen. I just want to talk to Jalen during that process. Like
how'd you get 81? Like, well,
when you're going into these timeouts, like at what point, like when...
I would have wanted you to have the seat right next to the visitor
bench. Yeah, I just want to know when did y'all stop addressing it, and when did the team, at any point, was it a 10-point check-in, like at 50? Like, come on, y'all, seriously. Like, yo, we got to get bodies on them. And at 60, what the fuck are we doing?
We're going to fight him tonight?
Like, what are we doing,
guys? Hard foul him? What are we
doing? This point, I would love to have been... just there, because I would just want to hear the players, because at that point, the confidence of everybody around you, it just keeps going down. It just keeps going down. It just keeps going down. I would say that. The game where he gave 81 to the Raptors, RIP Bean.
Rest in peace.
60.
What are you doing?
What are you doing?
What are you doing when you come back? What are you saying to your teammates? At that point, the yelling is over with the you got to help. Yeah. That's done. That's done. That only lasts until 28-30. Y'all not helping. He coming off the screens. He pop. Y'all got it. You got to beat her. All right. At 28-30, that's very valid. It's valid. At 60-70, somebody not doing their job.
At 60, is anybody guarding him? Like, are y'all even trying?
No, somebody not doing their job. Yeah, it's bad at that point.
If you could be remembered for one of your own jokes, which one would it be and why?
One of my own jokes? I'll say the best... In my opinion, the best joke that I think I've told, I think it's about my uncle Richard Jr. The whole run of say it with your chest,
little
ass nigga bitch. Yeah. Like that whole run of him getting out of jail, peel your muffin cap blue, all of those just run of jail jargon.
Yeah.
That he came home with. It's a very true. It's a very like.
What show was that? Because I watched that was in the stadium. You
that was seriously funny. Say it with your chest. Shit.
Mine was the battle rap.
Battle rap. yeah. Everybody gonna die. Pyrum, pyrum. Yeah. Everybody
the battle,
gonna die.
The battle rap.
Everybody
go.
Everybody. Pyrum, 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 pyrum.
That's all.
What is this?
That's all.
Pyrum, pyrum. That's when you know what's crazy, man. That's when like. That's when you in that shit. Like your material is different because you in it. You're around that shit. You're around that like the
first off, I kill niggas.
Yeah, first off, before I say anything, I kill niggas.
I slay niggas that don't love it. That was classic.
Yeah. You're around that. Like do you understand the comedy? That's why, I have such an appreciation for this generation of comics, Country Wayne, Desi Banks, like these guys that are doing comedy, but also the viral videos, the sketches, like, they're creating this new wave of funny plus funny,
right?
It's like, here goes some jokes and stand up, but I'm engaging my audience by giving them these sketches and bits, but they're in it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like they're in that energy. And when you see it, dude, I love it. I love it because I fucking remember it. Like you had endless material when you're around that group. You're around those guys. You're around those girls. You after the place, you at the Waffle House. You here. You traveling. You got all that. You got all that. That's the best place for comedians to be in the shit. If you in the shit,
right in the middle of
oh my God, you're funny as
to tell it.
You're funny as fucking forever.
Yeah, that's dope. Dream actor or actress you've yet to work with that you hope to work with?
I've yet to work with Denzel.
Y'all look alike a little bit.
I would love the Denzel opportunity. You know, I got something called True Story coming out. I got to work with Wesley Snipes. That was little insane. It's a thriller, some serious shit. But working with Wesley was kind of crazy. I would say Denzel, and you know, the biggest opportunity for me. Comedians are so like, it's probably the most ego driven. Fucking hub in entertainment because it's all about who's who. I mean, you're witnessing in music now, like with this whole the Drake and Kanye shit, right? Like for some reason, people just can't coexist and be good.
Right. Like everybody can't be great.
The conversation is always about
one
who,
or the other.
But yeah, it's nobody just sees the vision and understanding. And how dope certain things would be if they did coexist, right? If they, oh my God, what would that joint album? Oh my God, what would that song? Oh shit, what would people don't think like that? I'm that guy. So Harlem Nights, I've been talking about this for a long time. You know, Harlem Nights, you're looking at a movie that is forever watchable based off of the legendary talent in it. Mm-hmm. We've yet to truly see a full machine that embraces it. It was, you had attempts that were funny, but not full within talent. Roscoe Jenkins, Family Reunion. I remember Martin had Monique, he had Mike Epps. I think it's like one more comedian in there. I'm dropping the ball.
Said.
Mm-hmm. You've had like Chris Rock when he did Death at a Funeral, had Tracy Morgan. It was him. I had a cameo, but it you haven't seen the thing where like Friday, Cube did a lot of the comedians, and you saw what that movie was. But that movie can't come together again because comedians can't get on the same page.
Right.
It's impossible. If the world of could get done ever presented itself, and you know, people put the bullshit aside, that's the dream job. That's the dream opportunity, you know. Not Harlem Nights, but our version of that. Because you can't redo Harlem Nights. You can't make that movie again. Rest in peace to Chadwick Boseman. You know, before he passed away, we were talking about redoing Uptown Saturday Night. And we were talking about putting this, like we were on it. Me and Chadwick, we were in it. You know, if you watch the documentary, Don't Fuck This Up, he was in it, but this was happening. Like we were engaged, but I was expressing to him like, dude, this is what I want to do. To do it, I need a you to help me pull it off. I need the credibility within the main character. And we were in it. But the goal was to put all these black fucking legends in this thing and do this thing so that this generation, the generation before, can have a thing
right
after the thing. And it just doesn't seem like that code is going to get cracked. And I've been trying to crack it. I've been trying to crack it and finding the material, finding the right thing. But it just doesn't seem to happen. Egos are real. And, you know, when I think everybody realizes that we can all be fucking dope in our own way. It ain't about being doper than the next one or operating in the lane of yourself and being the king. Like you can. It's about success.
Right.
That's what this is about. For me, at the end of the day, it's about the numbers. That's what I look at. What do the numbers say at the end of the day? If we can generate great numbers and we all can have
together,
that's what are you talking about?
It's so, enough for everybody out here.
Enough.
Too.
Enough. So that would be my dream job. And for an actress working with Angela Bassett, I've yet to work with Angela Bassett.
That would be dope. Yeah. With new version of Harlem Nights. That would be crazy.
You know, that's it. That's mine.
If you could have one guest on All the Smoke, who would it be? But you have to help us with your answer, Will Ferrell.
I got to be here when y'all do it?
No.
Just no, you have to be. You got to help.
Oh, gotta help you guys to get somebody.
Get them on here.
Put a word.
Who will?
Or The Rock.
Jay-Z.
I'm trying to think who would do it. Like, wouldn't bullshit y'all and be like, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I'm trying to like
big time, right?
Yeah, like, cause it ain't big time. He's like, who the people that really understand the true value,
yeah,
in the show. Like, I'm not here as a favor. Like, I'm a fan.
Appreciate that.
The show was fucking great. You guys do an amazing job of engaging with the guests, and I love the shit that comes out of the guests, especially when y'all get, you know, the people that have played basketball and that are retired and mm-hmm. that are sharing stories. It's fucking great. If you guys, if it was real help of who would actually come on, I think you guys need a lover of basketball. Adam Sandler.
That would be dope.
And the reason why I said it, because Adam really loves basketball.
Mm-hmm. He actually wanted us to play in a little movie he's shooting out in Philly. I
wanted to do it too.
Adam, I think Adam would be a great guest. Loves the game of basketball, and I'm willing to bet he's more than aware of the podcast. Mm-hmm. I'm willing to bet.
Good call.
That's a dope answer.
That's what I would say.
Well, that's a wrap.
All right.
Kevin Hart, kickoff season 3, man. We appreciate your time. Best of luck in all your
chocolate
endeavors, fatherhood, business, making us laugh.
Yes, man. A lot of shit.
We really appreciate you, man.
A lot of shit. Guys, true story. I will be announcing that date soon. Doing a movie called Me Time Now with Mark Wahlberg for Netflix. Also, Heart to Heart. Make sure you check that out. That's on Peacock. Shouts out to Snoop, who we discovered some gold within Olympic highlights.
Yeah,
look for more things from me and Snoop, because we're figuring that out now as well. I say my co-host, my broadcasting buddy. Also, Celebrity Game Face, another show that I host on E! I'm finding joy in doing the things where I can bring talent together. So, you know, it's the truth.
Don't tell him what I got going on now.
He acts a little bit. He's been acting a little bit.
So keep me in mind.
Nice.
Congratulations. Congratulations. Hey, the face
he gave. Nice.
That's dope. That's real. That's dope, man. That's dope.
Hey, but on some real shit before we get out of here, man, we really just want to thank you, because I know we live in a generation where we don't really show too much appreciation for stars and legends to be. And, you know, I saw you have to check some people the other day on Instagram, and it's just, I don't think we're so caught up in throwing negativity out. We don't appreciate greatness when it's around us. So we definitely want to show you your love and your flowers, man, because you've been great. You keep making the world laugh and keep being you, man, because we need it.
Hey, listen, I appreciate you. I think
from the bottom to the top.
The times are just different now, and I'm really big on creating those opportunities for, you know, this next wave, the next generation. When I say that's a priority, it's a priority. That's the whole reason behind the production company, all the other entities. It's about understanding what good IP is and finding the right talent to be a part of it. You know, I'm very happy with what I've done, where I am. And you, once again, you got to find the new energy. And I think that new energy is in the new. So, you know, I still do things and I still figure it out for myself when and where, from movies to TV, but those projects will be different. And stand up, I'll do when I figure out what it is and what I want. But I love the idea of new stars. I love the idea of fresh new talent. Mm-hmm. I love the idea of supporting. And if anything, if you take anything from me and when I talk, how I talk, what I talk about, dude, it's about the fucking world of opportunity. More importantly, being there for so many, but information is all that's sometimes needed. Mm-hmm. So that freedom of support, that fucking open level of, yo, I love this person, hopefully that shit get contagious and people see that it's real. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm about. So, you know, as this business and all these things grow, I hope that we're talking about the talent that launched from it. The opportunities that came for so many from it that are opening up other doors and doing more things.
Love it. Well, that's a wrap. The opening of season 3 with the one and only Kevin Hart. You can catch us on Showtime Basketball YouTube and the iHeart platform Black Effects. See y'all next week.
Shout out to Plastic Cup Boys, too.
Shout out to that batch of unattractive.
This is All a Smoke, a production of The Black Effect and iHeart Radio in partnership with Showtime.